morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are in the world, and welcome to Information Week Live. I'm your host, Kurt Franklin, and we're pleased that you've been able to join us for this weekly wrap-up of all the best stories in IT. I'd like to remind everyone that this episode of Information Week Live is brought to you by Microsoft. This year, Gartner recognized Microsoft as a leader once again in the 2015 Magic Quadrant for Operational Database Management Systems, positioning it furthest to the right on the axis for completeness of vision and closest to the top on the axis for ability to execute. See what the new standard of database management looks like. Click on the link that you'll find above the player on our radio page and see what the report is all about. Now, joining me on today's show, we have Information Week Assistant Editor Kelly Sheridan. Kelly, welcome to Information Week Live.
Hi, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
We have Information Week Editor at Large, Charlie Babcock. Charlie, welcome to Information Week Live.
Kurt, good to be here.
And we have Information Week Executive Editor for Community, Dave Wagner. Dave, welcome to Information Week Live.
Thanks for having me, Kurt.
So the big thing is we've had in the past couple of weeks some really big news things. A couple of weeks ago, of course, the Dell EMC buy. What about this week? What has really caught your eye as a huge story this week? What should we all be talking about as we begin Information Week Live? Kelly, I'm going to look at you first because you have that traditional hotbed of news stories, Microsoft, as part of your beat.
Sure. Well, appropriate enough, Microsoft just reported its first quarter for 2016, its financial earnings. So there was a lot of interesting news there. Nothing entirely unexpected. Their revenue is continuing to be driven by cloud, and their phone business continues to plummet. So, yeah, that was the big news story for me this week.
Was there anything in any of that that surprised you?
Not especially, actually. So this past quarter brought a lot of news from them. We saw Windows 10 and its public launch. We just recently, a few weeks ago, they unveiled a whole new portfolio of devices. So right now, they're still trying to push Windows 10 adoption, and part of that is trying to drive hardware, especially in the business. Windows Phone aside, right now they're looking towards Surface, and that was another news story this week. They added to their Surface Enterprise package. So there are a couple of new things that might inspire businesses to adopt the new Surface Pro 4. And they have a few new businesses already signed up to adopt, but I think that's part of the big push in trying to get businesses to use Windows 10 is trying to get businesses to use these new devices. So Surface didn't really impress this quarter, but I think they're next quarter will show more in whether that strategy works or not.
Okay, now here's a question I want to ask of everyone on the panel. Microsoft seems to have this brand new push towards the hardware side of things when it comes to their tablets and tablet hybrids. Do you see this as frustration with their hardware partners? Is it some sort of desperation on the side of Microsoft, or is this just trying to kickstart a segment where demand hasn't been what the folks up in Redmond think it should be?
Kurt,
Charlie, why don't you take
Microsoft,
this one first?
Microsoft very much wants to kickstart that market. It wants to compete with Apple. It hates watching billions of consumer dollars flow out into someone else's hands when it still views itself as a consumer company. Windows was the ultimate consumer product at one time. They'd like to see their operating system and applications on more consumer products, and they're taking the extreme step of concluding only they can get the right products out there that might compete with Apple. Who among the device manufacturers has got the dollars to challenge Apple these days? I think Microsoft is pushing it, is trying very hard to get some manufacturer to be capable, to illustrate how a manufacturer could step up and produce a consumer device that would compete with Apple.
Okay, Kelly.
Go ahead.
Dave, let's go to Kelly first, and then I've got a very specific question I want to ask you.
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry.
I completely agree with Charlie here. I think that Microsoft is trying to create an entirely new category of products, but you see an interesting shift in how they're building their portfolio, because initially they had marketed the Surface as the hybrid device that could replace your laptop, right? But then in their most recent launch, they created a laptop. So I think they're realizing that they want to create this new category of hybrid devices, and they're sort of continuing that with their laptop because it does break off into a tablet as well. But they're realizing that there are people who will just not, they will not use the Surface. I mean, some people just see it as a tablet-first product, which I would agree it is. But I think the addition of a laptop is sort of them trying to appeal to the higher-end consumer market. Like Charlie said, try to compete with Apple and try to get some of those customers away from them.
Well, Dave, my question to you, and this sort of bounces off what Kelly said, when you're thinking about customers, there are vendors like Dell that has said it wants to be the one-stop shop for an enterprise that's looking to outfit its IT operation. Everything from what goes into the end user's hands all the way to the back end. Is it possible to be that one-stop shop if you don't have a product that is seen as a successful competitor in the market that the Surface Pro is trying to carve out?
Well, I don't think it is. If you think in terms of worrying about selling 100% from front to back, one of the things that's interesting that I think is going on here, beyond just wanting to kickstart the Surface market, is Satya Nadella has, in my mind, a vision for computing that is now outside the walls of Microsoft or Dell or Apple or any one person or company. He is talking about computing across every experience working, right? That's why they're starting to release Cortana on other phones, and why they're you know, releasing all their software across products now. And I think this is a natural extension of what Microsoft has always done. We forget that Bill Gates had an idea ahead of his time with Web TV, which we now see a similar device in every living room. The Xbox has been around for a long time. Microsoft, as far as I'm concerned, has always been a company that wants to go from your experience in your living room all the way to your experience in your office. But they don't have to do that by owning everything. They just need to be part of the process. They need to be able to say, look, Office is going to work here or there or wherever you want to use Office. Our cloud is going to enable that. So I think they're really ahead of the game. I think they've really got an idea that it's going to appeal to consumers, because your choices in the past have been, I'm an Apple person, I'm a Windows person, or I'm an Android person, right? And I think we're about to go beyond operating system to computing experience. And I think Microsoft's the first one to realize that.
Well, now, Charlie, I want to come back to you with something based on what Dave just said. and that's getting beyond the operating system. I know that you have spent an awful lot of time looking deeply into what goes on in the free and open source software communities, including Linux. And among the things that have been talked about up in Redmond the last couple of weeks, we've heard a lot of really good things about Linux, about, you know, Azure being a great platform for Linux, and Microsoft seems to be throwing its arms open wide to surround the free and open source software community. Do you think it's real? Do they mean it? Or are there some sort of Machiavellian intrigues going on?
Well, if it were Steve Ballmer doing it, I would have my serious doubts. But it's not Steve Ballmer doing it. It's Satya Nadella, who's an entirely different character. Also, you have to realize that the battle between Windows and open source is over, and both have won. They both have a major role in the data center. Nothing that I can see in the future is going to change that. Microsoft is bowing to a new reality where it shares the data center with open source, and will get even more share of it if it cooperates and continues to make the Windows Server more and more useful. And that's what it's doing. Instead of a kind of a brute force beat them down strategy, it is a more intelligent strategy, and it only really has to acknowledge the existence of one other partner, that would be Linux in the data center. And if they quietly went into the back room and said, all right, we're going to divide up the data center, you've got, I don't know how most enterprise data centers are divided, but I envision them as something like 75% Windows, 25% Linux. Some might be more like 65, 35, and so on and so forth. But that's a very, very big market to have gained. And if you can edge that percentage up by being cooperative, why wouldn't you do it?
Now, that was a very good question. Why wouldn't you do it indeed? Well, one of the stories, Kelly, that you wrote this week has gotten a fair amount of comment, and I'd like to get your take again on the story and some of the comments that it's been getting. You covered a story where IBM, of all companies, came out with a report that said that apparently one of the reasons they've been handing out Macintosh computers to their employees is that they have the hard numbers, and Macs require less in terms of support cost than Windows machines. Tell us about this story.
Sure. Well, I thought it was interesting that IBM, you know, being such a big company, decided to take on this massive task of deploying MacBooks within the organization, because I mean, when it had initially come up as an idea and IBM employees had requested Macs, the status quo thinking was that these would be too expensive, they would require too much maintenance. And at the end of the day, they found that people who had Macs were calling the help desk less frequently. And as a result, the help desk for people with MacBooks was comparatively smaller than the help desk for people using PCs. And the way that they set it up was that the people with the MacBooks would get a sort of like it was an easier setup process. The people who got MacBooks generally, like, they set up the devices themselves and had the ability to download IT pre-approved apps onto it. So I thought it was cool the way that they did it. And I use Macs, I use PCs on a daily basis, and I can't say that one usually requires more IT support than the other, but I'd be interested also to hear Dave's take and Charlie's take on this and what they think, because personally I don't see, there's not much of a difference for me, but I think that people who use Apple devices more frequently use iPhones and iPads in their personal for personal use would have an easier time using a Mac in the workplace?
Well, I think the problem IBM is going to run into, I believe, is that the study may have built-in biases. When you are a large enterprise where the default is one operating system, in this case Windows, the people who are allowed to do the non-default choice, which in this case is Apple, are always going to be people who are of generally higher rank and are being given those computers because they think it serves a specific purpose to their needs, right? So my belief is that when you flip that script, it doesn't matter whether we're talking Microsoft or Apple or Apple and Microsoft, what's going to happen is that the people who aren't power users are the ones who need the help. So it doesn't matter whether they're using an Apple or a Windows machine. What matters is they weren't a power user. They weren't in the elite club that allowed them to choose what computer they were using. So I think IBM is going to find itself spending just as much time on tech support with those people as they did before, regardless of the machine. But that is just a guess. Obviously, there might be one system that's easier to use than another, but I think it has more to do with an existing bias with the way workers work.
Yeah, I see what Dave is saying. I have a little different take on it, and I think IBM is very adroitly getting on the right side of history here. I think the young employees coming into the companies that IBM wishes to do consulting work with all want Apple devices. I've personally left my big, thick ThinkPad on the curb outside my house several nights, and I can't get anyone to take it. Apple has won the smartphone race. It's overwhelmingly clear to me, even though I don't wish to enlist in kind of the Apple universe, the Apple control system. I have to admit they have produced by far the best smartphone and sustained it and advanced it, and Android is having a great deal of difficulty matching or catching up. So if that's a key future device, then you have a built-in audience for laptops and desktops made by the same company. And I think it's that trend that IBM is trying to get on the right side of. Historically, it's been very x86 oriented as the preferred consumer architecture, and it's switching that. To me, it's quite significant that IBM is switching toward Apple.
It also needs to be pointed out that Apple and IBM have been making other strategic partnerships, especially in machine learning and in mobile. So it stands to reason that if IBM is looking to have a strategic partnership with Apple, they have to have Apple machines, you know, in their area, and they no longer have a finger in any kind of laptop or machine pie. So it really doesn't matter anymore what anybody's using there.
You know, that's a really good point, Dave, that IBM and Apple have teamed up on some vertical market business software for iPads. And I think we can assume that if there's software for the iPad, it's also going to be usable on things like the iPhone 6 Plus and iPhone 6 Plus S or S6 Plus or however their nomenclature works there. You know, one of the things that this brings up, though, is where the user experience matters. And we've seen this in a number of places. You know, Satya Nadella and Microsoft under his watch have, as Charlie pointed out, been putting their software on just about every operating system platform imaginable. And you're also having companies like SAP and Oracle talk about the kind of experience that their platforms bring to software. So, you know, the world has been broken down along operating system lines for nearly 30 years, maybe for a little longer than that. Is that era ending? Is the operating system still the right place to draw lines, or is there someplace else that we're going to claim as our clan when we're choosing the best kind of experience to have? Kelly, you are the panel's youngest member, the one with your finger on the pulse of the tide of workers coming into the industry. What do you think about this?
I think the operating system absolutely matters. I think that's why Microsoft went all out with its Windows 10 launch earlier this year, and that's why it's giving it away as a free upgrade for the next year or so until, 1 year after its launch. It's really trying to push its new operating system because I think it sees that that's where people are going to find the user experience that they like best, and that's why it's making the Windows 10 interface so touch-friendly and suitable for tablets and laptops, and they're working on smartphones, but who knows if anybody will use them. But I think they realize how important the operating system is and how that can make such a big difference in whether people adopt the new device or not. And Apple's always constantly pushing updates for its iOS system, and I believe we posted an article this week that iOS 9.1 has some of the fastest adoption so far. So I think it's definitely important, and people are always going to be looking for the best user experience through there.
Dave, what's your take on this? I know that you have typically had some interesting things to say about platforms, but are you ready to shift your focus away from the basic operating system platform?
Well, it depends on which point of view you're talking about here, right? If you're talking about from the point of view of the consumer still has to pick a device in the end, right? The thing that it's going to interact with. Until we have computers in our brains, I'm still going to have a phone, I'm still going to have a laptop. So on one level or another, I still have to have the experience of the interface of that operating system, right? So that matters. That having the interface that I like matters. That's why I'm an Android user, because I find it more customizable than iOS. It's why I would switch to Windows if I could find a phone I really like and apps I really like. But after you talk about the turning on the device and getting to the app that you're trying to get to, 99% of my interaction with the device is not the operating system. The operating system is how I get to something else, right? So in that sense, the operating system stops mattering because of the cloud, because of my ability to sign into something across multiple places. My 9-year-old daughter yesterday said to me something I thought was very cute, which is she said, "I wish I could get the same playlists on my Spotify on our laptop as on our phone." And I said, "Well, we do have that." And she goes, "Oh, great." And anybody older than that is already having that expectation, right? Anybody who has a little more experience with computers. In fact, I was a little surprised she didn't have that expectation. The expectation soon is that whether I'm interacting with my Xbox in my living room, my phone on the BART, or my laptop in my office, I'm going to have a completely seamless experience. So much so that if I'm working on a file on one, I ought to be able to work on the file on the other one before I even ask the machine to do it. It should just know, hey, he was working on that, he walked into the room, pop, there it is, right? Once that is complete and real because of the cloud across all experiences, the operating system is only a tiny tenth of a percent of the experience that a user has.
Well, Charlie, what's your take on this? You live in your coverage areas in a bunch of different worlds. Is the operating system the most interesting part of it to you, or do you think it's moving up the stack in terms of where our primary loyalty is going to lie?
I agree with Dave's last statement there. The operating system is fading into the background. Pretty soon we won't know which operating system we're using, and we won't particularly care. There's too many things you can do to front-end the operating system and make it one seamless experience. Apple and Apple devices, I think, are going to occupy quite a large section of our world, both at work and at home. And I'm an Android user, but I can see how Google's management of Android is leaving it in second place in this, mobile device and smartphone race. So I kind of have to accept the fact that somewhere in my future there's an Apple device, and I'm going to use it, and I'm going to merge it with other things that I use, and I won't really care that it's iOS. I won't really care if something else is Windows. I'll be dwelling in that user experience as Dave described.
Well, I want to move on a little bit from the world of the operating system and the platform and find out what we think about something else that's a real part of our industry, and that is the conference seasons. It seems like spring is one. We're in the middle of the autumnal conference season. We just had our big SAP Tech Ed was this week. Dell World was this week. Oracle World is next week, and I know that Information Week has a number of folks who are going to be looking at Oracle World. Do we have anyone who is looking forward to, say, Oracle World, or who has heard something out of one of our current crop of conferences that makes you think about things in a new way? Any sort of excitement going on, or is this just part of the IT business world treadmill that we all have to be on?
You failed to mention VMworld and Dreamforce, which occurred here in San Francisco not too long ago. Yes, it's
absolutely
the fall conference season. You know, and nothing in particular stands out as earth-shaking news out of these conferences. But you can see kind of in the background as the companies buy, sell, merge, consolidate, that there are very big movements going on behind the covers of these shows, and Dell World certainly is an example of that. Oracle Open World coming up, the main thing I would be looking for has to do with their middleware, and not too many people are interested in that, but I am. They'll bring out a new version of their application server, WebLogic, and many enterprises use it to run applications, so we'll be taking a look at that, but again, the world is not waiting with bated breath for the next version of WebLogic.
Kelly, what do you think? Have you been anxiously watching the news wires for stuff coming from conferences, or are there conferences coming up where you anticipate just being on tenterhooks for the news that's going to be breaking?
Nothing on my horizon right now, but I'll be keeping an eye out just to see what rolls out of our fall conference season and, yeah, see if any surprises roll in over the next few weeks.
Dave, how about you? I know you're there where the Bay Area conferences are within reach. Do you have any plans going forward, or anything that has happened out there in the Bay Area that you've been struck by so far this season?
You know, my favorite part about this time of year is actually listening for the changes in language. We have a way of talking about things as part of the hype cycle, right? And so, for instance, big data is a word that really got thrown around for a long time. And then big data as a concept seems to have disappointed a lot of companies. So now we really talk more about analytics, and we talk about algorithms, and we talk about business intelligence again. Those are, you know, some of those languages we used before big data, some we didn't, but now we're using them again. One of the things that I like as a writer, I guess, is listening to the way conferences are changing the language of the way we're talking about technology, because it tells me when something goes from hype to just business, right? And to me, when we stopped hearing the word big data as often, it meant that big data was ready for business. So one of my favorite things I've noticed about conferences this year is there's been a lot of that. And so it's not really about an announcement. It's really about listening to the details.
Well, listening to details is something we all try to do, I know, and it's something that you do, and we've come to that part of the show where we ask about some specific details that you've been listening to. Those are the details that you bring to the Geek End. So talk to us about the Geek End. I'm embarrassed to say that I've been working on other stuff, and I haven't had a chance to get over and take a look for the Geek End yet. So tell us what it's all about this week.
Sure. It may actually not be up. I have to say, I am computerless right now. I'm getting a new computer, so I haven't even gotten a chance to see if it's up. But I finished it late last night, and it is our annual Halloween special. As longtime readers of the Geek End may know, we do an annual zombie themed episode for Halloween. This year, we're giving you three paranormal creatures for one. We're talking a little bit about zombies, ghosts, and vampires, and the technology that we're using to hunt them and find them. The reason for this is that the real estate site Trulia has done a truly entertaining thing, which is that they're using their traditional big data program. There's that word, big data. Their traditional algorithms that they use for maps in a very clever way to tell you whether your neighborhood is more likely to be haunted by ghosts or vampires or zombies. And the way they do this is, for instance, for vampires, they see how many blood banks are in your area, which I think is a very cute use of the technology. So I use that as a launching point to look and find some apps and mobile technology and algorithms and other kinds of data that are actually being used either for entertainment or for seriously pursuing the paranormal. So if you're looking for a fun Halloween-themed article, check it out. I think we found some really, really fun stuff, whether this is your bag or whether you like to make fun of it. We did a little bit of both there. And it's a lot of fun. My favorite is an app that reads the background paranormal noise the ghosts are saying and actually interprets it for you through an app. I found that very entertaining.
That last one seems like the major plot hook for an indie horror film out next year.
Yes, absolutely.
And I've got to admit, I'm intrigued by the notion that if the zombie apocalypse does come, that the person you might want to have close to you is a data scientist. That's another
right.
Great angle to that.
Right.
I don't I don't know, Charlie. What do you think? Are we ready to appify our entire Halloween experience?
Well, I'm not, but some people might be. I was looking at Wired this week, and they had pronounced a whole group of older technology companies as among the Walking Dead, and I thought that's a harsh characterization, and I wonder what analysis. Don't they know some of these companies have been around a lot longer than Wired and may still be here after Wired has gone? At any rate, I think I'll just stick to my pumpkin carving and trick-or-treating.
I think that pumpkin carving and trick-or-treating are both great things. Kelly, how about you? Are you ready to turn your paranormal activities over to your smartphone?
I'm actually really excited to read Dave's story, and I'm terrified that whoever came up with the movie Her will find out about the app that tracks paranormal voices through your phones and create a sequel out of it. But yeah, I think it's fun, you know, like I could really see someone like running away with that idea, you know, like, oh, there, I can listen to ghosts through my phone or something. I mean, if it's just for fun, I don't see why not. I mean, kids these days are attached to smartphones anyway. You might as well make a Halloween experience out of it, you know.
Well, I don't know if it exists, but Charlie gave me an idea with the trick-or-treating thing. I think we need an app that's crowdsourced. You put into your phone what treat you got at each house as you went, so that next year you can use the crowdsource data and it will use Google Maps plus that information to map out the perfect trick-or-treat routes to get the kinds of candy you like the most.
That is brilliant.
Yes.
It truly is brilliant.
I'd like to patent it now. Can I patent something on the phone before anybody takes it from me?
Sure, why not?
Broadcasting your idea isn't the best way to save it, but, you know.
Well, we can say we heard it here first.
Yeah.
There we go. Well, I'm afraid that with that, we're coming to the end of our time here for Information Week Live for this week. So it's time to run down everyone on the panel and find out what's coming up for the coming week. Kelly, we'll start with you. What's on your radar and what should we be looking for from you in the week to come?
Sure. Well, what comes to mind first is my Monday schedule, and that day I will be in New York City's Midtown for the opening of Microsoft's first Manhattan flagship store. It doesn't sound like that big a deal, but this store spans 5 floors and an incredible number of square feet. So I'm mostly curious to see how they're going to fill that space and what kinds they're going to have a bunch of new devices on hand. So I'm hoping to get up close with those once more and take a few cool pictures. And then I'll be keeping my eye on Apple's earnings call, which is later the same day.
Outstanding. We'll be looking forward to following you there. Speaking of following you, where can we find you on the Tweety Pipes or other social media outlets?
Twitter, you can find me at Kelly Sheridan 22. That's Kelly with a Y. Sheridan is Sheridan 22.
Well, thank you so much for taking time out of a busy schedule to be with us this afternoon. We'll look forward to reading your stuff next week and having you as a guest again on Information Week Live very soon.
Absolutely. Charlie, happy to be here.
Charlie, we'll turn to you now. What's on your radar for the coming week?
Well, I'll be at Oracle Open World. I'll be listening to talks by Thomas Kurian and John Fowler. They'll have some Oracle developments, database, middleware, appliances, and we'll see what we come away from with that. And like I say, WebLogic is going to be advanced and come out in a new version, I believe.
Outstanding. We'll look forward to that. And how can we follow you on the various social media outlets?
That would be on Twitter at Babcock CW. I tweet frequently, and we'll try to get the word out.
We appreciate it. Thanks for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Dave, how about you? Are you going to be joining our colleagues at Oracle Open World, or are you doing other things for the coming week?
I will be doing other things. Sunday, we have our annual wrap-up of geeky Halloween costumes, which is always a favorite. And I will be, I'll be having a few articles, one on personalized medicine and new uses for the technology around personalized medicine, which I think is going to be very interesting. And more surprises as we go.
Ooh, surprises. Always something good to have. And where can we follow you so that you can let us know when those surprises are on their way?
At Geekend Dave. That's weekend, but with a G, Dave. You can also find me on Information Week and on allanalytics.com.
Well, we appreciate you taking time out of a busy schedule to be with us.
Oh, no problem, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
As for me, one of the things that I've got coming up is an interview that I did with SAP's CEO, Bill McDermott. This week was SAP's earnings call, and I took the opportunity to get on the phone with Bill McDermott, where we talked about pretty much everything but the earnings call. It was a good interview, I think, and that will be up sometime in the next probably 72 hours or so. Got lots of interesting stuff coming up in the coming weeks. And please follow me on Twitter at KG4GWA. And also follow me on Periscope. I've been having some fun with Periscope, doing stuff around the conferences I attend, and other stuff. For example, tomorrow the plan is to head out to the single open house day every year at one of the large bat refuges here in North Florida. So looking forward to that. Well, for everyone here at Information Week Live, we appreciate you being with us. Want to remind you that this episode of Information Week Live has been brought to you by Microsoft. This year, Gartner recognized Microsoft as a leader once again in the 2015 Magic Quadrant for Operational Database Management Systems, positioning it furthest to the right on the axis for completeness of vision and closest to the top on the axis for ability to execute. See what the new standard of database management looks like. Click on the link that you can find just above the player on this radio page and get that report now. We'd like to thank Microsoft for their sponsorship. Thank you for being here with us. And remind you that we come your way every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's exactly where you will find us next week. We hope that you'll join us. Until then, thanks so much. Hey, we will see you next time.